Should we talk about boobs? Like, what is happening?
I mean, like,
what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Daisies. I'm Akash.
I'm Arjun.
And today we have with us one of my first friends in comedy when I moved to LA, period. I was a young kid, made friends with this dude, and now he's blowing up way faster than me. He's a writer for Girls. He's a storyboard editor for The Carmichael Show. He just shot the lead in a pilot. What is the name of the pilot?
Making History. Also, I'm not a storyboard editor. I'm a story editor.
I'm not successful enough to know the term, bruh.
Story editor is just, it's just a different name for writer.
With a very high pay grade. And yes. That's what I equate success to, because that's what Indians do. And also, I just helped him with an audition, and he's a super talented actor, and if he doesn't get the audition, Judd Apatow doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. So, welcome to the show, Yasser Lester.
We have to edit this entire thing. This is crazy.
People are going to be
like, it's like, there's three mentally challenged people trying to give each other props.
First of all, I'm going to tell you guys something very real. I haven't tried to give anyone props.
Oh, yet. That's good. Yeah.
And actually, Yasser and I met on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because Yasser, I don't know.
I came at you for being good looking. Akash spent a day talking about you because we were talking about the podcast. Y'all had just started it. And then he was like, oh, here's a picture of Arjun. And then I said,
here's a picture of Arjun?
Yes.
Why would I do that?
Why would I? I wouldn't Google a picture of him.
Because I'm with Yasser. Because let's be honest, guys. On the low, Akash is just jealous of how good looking I am. And it's a problem.
I don't understand the way in which you're good looking. I'm being serious. I just don't get it.
Here's the thing. Because you showed me the picture, and I was like, oh, he is good looking. Because you talked about, you said he was good looking, and you said he was tall. And I was like, he's tall?
He thinks he's good looking.
Okay. Either way. I don't care how
massive
you
difference.
But why would you be like, he thinks he's good looking. Here's a picture of him. That's crazy.
I could see he thinks he's good looking. Let me see a picture of him. Because I'm very interested in good looking dudes.
Yeah, I know. But that's why it makes sense that you would then show me a picture. I was like,
he's not good looking.
He is. You're good looking.
If he's good looking, I wouldn't be able to be friends with him on
and
this
And he's tall.
This is the greatest 3 minutes of my life. This is amazing.
So you showed me the picture. And then we just started talking about, we were talking about the podcast more than anything. And then you tweeted at him something. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to just go after this dude. And so I tweeted something crazy at you. I was just like, the only good looking people in the world are me, Brad Pitt, and Jason Momoa. Arjun, you got nothing on us. And you were like.
You also called out Tone Bell.
Leto. Yeah. Actually, I remember you said like, I don't know why all these people think that these guys are good looking. What about me? And I was just sitting there and I was like, do people think I'm good looking? Like, I'm not in this equation. Why have I been thrown in this?
But you were like, what?
But then what was funny is I think I tweeted back something innocuous, like, oh, that's very kind or something. Because I was like, I don't know this dude. But then I called Akash and I was like, this is a weird thing that's happening to me on Twitter.
We knew each other.
I didn't know that y'all knew each other. And then what happened is then 12 seconds later, I get a tweet. That from you, you're taking a screenshot, or you were taking a screenshot.
Here's what happened. I was there in the middle. So what happened is, I see Yasser's tweet, and then I text Yasser, like, why the fuck are you putting this dude in this conversation? Now he's going to be excited about the good-looking company he's in. Because the company, I remember being like, oh, definitively good-looking.
Oh,
dude.
Michael Ealy was in there, too.
Yeah. Michael Ealy was in there. So I screenshot Arjun calling me, because Arjun texted me, like, hey, something weird is happening on Twitter. And then I text Yasser like, oh, God. And then Arjun calls me. So I text Yasser the screenshot. Like, now this motherfucker's calling me to brag about how good looking he is.
For the record, I'm on the phone with him. I was like, I don't know what to do with this situation on Twitter because this feels uncomfortable.
Yasser's the funniest person I've ever seen on Twitter.
I mean,
I enjoy
it.
But Yasser takes the screenshot of Arjun Gupta calling and puts it on Twitter. And he's like, here's Arjun Gupta calling me to beg me to... like, say he's as good-looking as I am, but he's not.
And then I realized what time it was. I was like, oh, somebody knows somebody. Yeah. Something's happening here. But I will say, for a moment, though, I was scared, because I was like, what is this dude creating these images from?
Dog, could you imagine if... But that's the thing, like...
Twitter, but that happens on the internet.
All the time. Yo, like, someone threatened to kill me multiple times.
What?
Like, I was on the road with another comedian... and they were getting death threats from this person. And then they somehow realized I was opening for them. And then was just like, "You are black and you are dead." And I was like, "Wait, what?" Someone was like, "I'm coming." They were like, "I'm coming to this show, and while you are on stage, I am going to shoot you to get at the headliner. Like, you are gonna die tonight. Be ready for it." And I was just like, "That's crazy."
Did that scare you?
That's scary, dog.
Absolutely. Because I'm not like, I'm not a dude who, like, if you come at me on the street on something, like, I mean, I'll fight just because it's like, you know, fight or flight. Like, you just, your body kicks in. But like, I don't want to read that stuff like an hour before and have like time to like process it. It's like, wait, this dude has a gun and he's like driving. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that is so haunting to me. And that's like, that's all the internet is now. It's either people being like, "You're not a feminist," or "I'm going to kill you." That's it. Like, people are attacking you for not fighting for the rights of everyone, or they're killing you for fighting for the rights of everyone. That's it.
You were not scared to, like, did you handle, how did you handle
it? Dog, I 100% was scared. And I was like,
did you, like,
I guess,
tell somebody about it?
When they like, told security of the venue or whatever, but, like, I was just like, yo, the kid just may die telling this McDonald's joke tonight. Like, I may just die.
Well, that's crazy because, yo, like, who was it? Vernon Hargraves. This is a draft story. Vernon Hargraves got dragged through the mud the last couple days because someone with a fake account on Twitter tweeted that he was had a drug problem. And that he had failed a drug test at the scouting combine for the NFL.
They did the same thing with Joey Bosa, another NFL prospect. Yeah.
But this to the point where, like, a reputable, I think it was like MSNBC Sports or something, quoted it as a source, that fake account, and then had to issue an apology. And I'm like, Jesus, man.
Dog, it's crazy. It's like, do you guys watch, I don't watch a bunch of news, but, you know, if I do, it ends up being like CNN, something very just, you know, general. And, like, now CNN will be like, okay, we have breaking news from, Brussels. There have been 4 attacks now. And here's a tweet from someone who's on the scene. It comes from CatLover42069. And he says, "Wow, this is bonkers." And I'm like, these are our sources now. I mean, like, there's nothing happening.
We found out about Harry Tubman. Yasser told me, we were hanging out. Yasser was like, "Yo, Harry Tubman on the $20 bill." And then our other friend Robbie was like, "Yep." And I was like, "What? I'm checking CNN. I'm not seeing this." And they're like, "Yeah, we got it off Twitter." And that's news now.
I mean, well, there is something. Ferguson changed everything. I mean, the Arab Spring changed everything because of what Twitter did, starting from a revolutionary standpoint. But then Ferguson changed everything, I think, because people started to get a more objective overview of what was happening in Ferguson because of Twitter and people But those were still following reporters that were on the ground that were using journalistic, like, code of conduct with it, and they were following that. Just checking CatLover42069. Yeah. I mean, it's like the number of times that these news sites are getting fucked because they don't check their sources.
But you gotta chase ratings. You have an infinite amount of news. You know how crazy that is?
Yeah.
24-hour news cycle means I have an infinite amount of news I have to get you to watch so I can sell ads.
Well, that's the difference, man, because there is enough news in the entire world to fill 24 hours a day. But most people don't give a fuck what's happening in Sudan.
Yeah.
So they're not going to talk about... I mean, that's why, for me, the whole Facebook thing, when it was just the France flag, when I think something had happened in Nigeria that same week.
Yeah. It was Kenya. Those 200 students got murdered in Kenya. It was the Jesui Charlie thing.
It was Jesui Charlie, and then there was something happening in there, and it was like, students, where was the... Where was that flag?
No one cares. The problem is that, like, it's so... We care... I mean, like, I hate to be, like, one of those dudes, like, it's first world problems, but that's... We really can't process much more. You know what I mean? And that's the problem, is it used to be things were so big that it would make it to us, right? Like, if something happened in Madagascar, it had to be so big that it made it to us, right? And then we're like, oh my God. And then as a nation, you care about that one thing. Right. When you know everything all the time, it's physically impossible.
You have to create filters.
Absolutely. And that's why we only really care about the things that, you know, directly affect us.
I remember I had this... disagreement with you at a movie theater. There was an advertisement to save the black rhinos, and I was like, no, I don't. I can't care that much.
Yeah,
I cannot care about everything. And then Yasser was like, yes, you can. I was like, no, zero chance I'm ever gonna go fuck about a black rhino. And then I do a joke on stage where I'm like, I just started caring about black people, and you want me to get I gotta get to rhinoceri by this point? Come on, it's crazy.
But see, that's the thing. It's like, I, in seeing that ad, I was probably in that moment being like, oh, wow, maybe we should save a black rhino. But 100%, if you put Cecil the Lion in front of me right now, I would kill him again.
Oh, my God. Well, actually, I'm gonna shout out Travis Santel, who's my boy who I go traveling with, one of the smarter dudes that I know. He went to this is a funny ass story. I'm putting you on blast. I'm sorry, bro. But he went to this show. They were doing his Discovery Channel show. His friend was producing about, like, save the whale wars or something. Like,
yeah.
Protecting that. And so he went to this thing. He's been a vegetarian for the last, like, 20 years of his life. And he was outside at this party, and outside there were food trucks serving, like, hot dogs and burgers and all this sort of stuff. He's sitting in there, and afterwards there was a panel discussion, and everyone was standing up being like, oh, my God, this is the most important thing. I can't believe you got – what are we – like, this – I can't, I'm so touched by how much is happening, what you've been doing for the world. And then Travis, again, he puts his hand up, and his friend who's on stage is like, no, please don't. Travis puts his hand up, and he's like, hi, I'm sorry, I have a question for you. In Japan, these whales are now overpopulated, which is becoming a problem. And in a world where we know that pigs and cows have higher pain receptors, which means they feel pain more, and they are more social than animals in the sea, why are you serving hot dogs and hamburgers outside? I don't under. What are we doing here? Is what he said. What are we saving? What are we doing? And it was, he got booed out of the. He got booed of out of the.
Of course.
Of course. It's amazing what people, the power of those advertisements and other stuff is to play on people's emotions. As 100%. Soon as they play on the emotions, you no longer, because what he was offering was a very rational, reasonable right. question. And he honestly wasn't trying to come from a place of judgment. He honestly wanted to understand, like, what yeah. are you trying to accomplish so I can get on board? Because right now I'm not understanding the message. Why should we care about these whales more than you care about how, like, with the pigs and cows? Like, Cecil, why is that happening?
So you asked Cecil's point. Cecil the Lion, now people have stopped killing lions so much that lions are overpopulated and they're decimating the rest of the population
of animals. Of animals.
So they have to go through, and they're going to have to, like, cull the lion population because activists have killed more animals than
There's ways of doing that don't require culling. They can move the lions to other wildlife reserves and other areas of Africa.
Here's my point.
So that's, I mean, I hear that it's a funny argument to make, but it doesn't really hold water in that situation.
Well, here's my point, just the things being juxtaposed. The same week that Cecil the Lion is killed by some, by the way, I don't think it's dope that Cecil the Lion was killed. I need to very much, it's like, it's crazy.
I mean, you did kill that, a lion, that's kind of dope.
Like, well, you're a fat dentist. I'm sure this safari guide.
More impressive.
No, this safari.
It's not, he literally paid people to lure the lion out. He kept shooting it. The lion was just like, I'm fine. And then they had to physically bring it out of the park. Three Africans, like, finally subdued the lion, and then he killed it. It's not like he was, like, in a tree with, like, a scope. He was just like, I'm a dentist who has money.
Well, your friend's got to stop snitching on you with the actual story, and you just have the picture of you on Instagram with a dead lion.
It's too much. But here's my point, going back to it. Like, the selectiveness of what we care about. Because that same week, or within a week or two, was the same time that Tamir Rice's
Cleveland?
Yeah.
He got shot.
Yeah. Tamir Rice, either the cop killed him or that they decided not to press charges against the police officer. Same, like, within 9 days of one another, there are celebrities on TV crying for a lion, which, again, very sad. No one mentions that a 12-year-old boy is murdered in a park in broad daylight by the people that are meant to protect us. No one talks about it. Not once. You know what I mean? But meanwhile, we have benefits. We have people calling for the dentist, a dentist who paid $50,000 to kill an animal, which, again, like, however you feel about it is how you feel. But, like, I very much believe that you have to put human life over anything else. We're self-aware. There's no other animal on this planet that's as self-aware as us. And the idea that, like, the people that are meant and paid to watch out for you are actively murdering its population, murdering its black population and its brown population.
And well, I think that what you're speaking to is that the lion was an isolated incident that was indicative of maybe a larger problem, but was fairly an isolated incident that not everyone is going to be like at risk to, because the dentist had to have $50,000 and had to have the desire to spend that $50,000 on killing a lion, which we should question the dentist. That's the like psychological makeup that requires that you want to spend that much money on killing an animal, but that's a different conversation. Tamir Rice was a part of a pattern, a very like clear and hard to ignore pattern of police brutality, of right. like the machinization of literally the death of black young men by the people that protect them. And that's the thing that's crazy to not focus on. Right. A pattern versus an isolated incident.
Right.
Because people are weird about animals, man. People are weird.
They absolutely.
Just no, no, no. Easily, though.
Number one, white people are weird about animals. I need to be like, I don't know, man.
I think dog fighting, I don't get it. I understand that it's a cultural thing, but dog fighting is a weird
thing to me. But also dogs fight in nature in the same way that everything else that, you know what I mean? Like I totally get that it's weird to be like, I'm going to train this thing to go attack something else.
Fight in nature just to fight.
Not just to fight, but for a reason, for
survival.
Absolutely. But at the same time, like that dog fighting to me over people getting murdered or, you know, child labor or any of the other things in this world. And I'm not, I forgot the name of the term where you juxtapose one thing against the other. And what's it? The law of, and I forgot. Doesn't matter. Edit this part out. There's a psychological term for what we're talking about. But clearly that we place animals on a higher pedestal sometimes, especially in other cultures. But I will say that like, white people's love of their animals, like just on the train today, there was just a dude just like with his dog and it was like, clear the way, everyone. And like the dog was like laying out and like chilling. And I was like, this dude probably kicked over 4 homeless people to make sure that like this thing that is essentially dinner everywhere else in the world could have a seat. Like, I just don't care.
Chris Rock had a great line in Kill the Messenger. When you see a homeless person with a dog, you feel sorry for the dog.
Yeah.
A homeless man with a dog. You feel sorry for the dog.
Absolutely.
I will say this, though, and I don't know how to weight it because we have like 7 different topics at hand, but I will say this. The one that I agree that, you know, the priorities should be, I think that I would agree that the priority should be around police brutality. I don't think that you can't have space for both. I don't think that you have to choose one or the other.
Right, but the problem
kind
I
of make space.
Well, I was going to say right. That's the problem. Is I don't think you have to choose one or the other. I think you can talk about Tamir Rice and you can talk about this lion getting killed, and that's what the point I was making earlier about news carrying weight before. Like right. Cecil the Lion, what it is a crazy story. Like you think a dentist flew to Africa and then spent $50,000 and then killed this thing. Like I mean, all of it is crazy, but the problem is that the other story was drowned out.
Well, yeah, completely. And that's to your theory from before. Back in the day, when you only had 30 minutes of news a day, Cecil the Lion ain't making it. We have Tamir Rice just got shot. And to me, like an even bigger problem, everybody's starving all over the world. People are dying millions every day from starvation or whatever the number is.
Right.
But like, you got 30 minutes to fill with these massive stories, and then Cecil the Lion will be like a footnote. Hey, by the way, this lion y'all love got shot. All right, cool. President might get killed later tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, when right. you got 24 hours, whatever people can feel strongly about, let's just exploit that and exploit that and exploit that.
But that doesn't have to do with the fact that you're, it sounds like, I should ask phrase this as a question. Are you saying that the issue then lies because there's a 24-hour news cycle? Or because
that's
news has become,
that's why Cecil the Lion gets hyped up so much.
See, I think it's
so
because news has become a commodity. Now, if these news networks were given the airwaves for free, which is how news started, when the idea of making a profit was taken out of those 30 minutes a day, that was when they could be more objective about what like mattered, and rather than focusing on how to draw people to the audience.
I always say the only time I'll trust the news is when it's commercial free.
Does the news have commercials? I don't watch enough CNN.
Yeah,
CNN
does. Yeah.
But aren't the commercials usually promos for their own
network? The idea that they're
network?
Making profits, and that's what they're
right.
doing.
Right, I see what you're saying. Yeah. But yeah. Oh, sorry.
And
yeah.
It's like sponsored segments and all that stuff. Yeah. Like,
I don't mind. Look, I like Quartz. It's a news website. They're very open about what their sponsored
right,
things
yeah.
are. And that allows me to feel at least like, okay, I know when to put on my more critical hat.
Right.
Like, more than I normally should be with news. But I do think that, like, to me, it's not the issue that there's a 24-hour news. I think it honestly would be pretty amazing if they had a 24-hour news network that wasn't that was given the funds by the government that could focus on the things that mattered. It's what we call PBS, actually, folks. It's a great. I think then people, because then there was an article.
Where do y'all get your news? Who y'all watch the news? Y'all believe in? I don't give a shit. Y'all don't get your news from PBS.
No, I listen to NPR. Which is similar to PBS. I don't have cable, so I don't watch any of these things. Yeah. I get most of my news from the internet.
Yeah, I was gonna say I read the internet now. Right. I mean, like, again, at least with the internet, and you know, for those of you that have ever seen me on stage or listened to me before, I 100% believe the internet is the greatest invention in human history. I think it's more important than fire. Like, granted,
I'd love to hear about that because I disagree. Yeah.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay. Here's what I'll say. Whereas before, when we had CNN and Fox News on TV, though, you had two different opinions. They're on the same, or you had two different sides of the same story, right? At least now, and I'm not saying it's great, because there are moments where you have 90 opinions or 90 different viewpoints on the same story. So you kind of find the one that is closer to what aligns to you, you know, definitely. And I feel like that's what everyone does now, and that's why, you know, the internet is almost nothing but arguing. But at least there are 90 now, as opposed to the two. So you can have CNN sponsored by Kraft Mac and Cheese, and you're watching a segment on how great dairy is for you, and then, you know, you watch Fox News, and they're, you know, sponsored by, for the sake of argument, we'll say Monsanto, and they want you to buy soy milk, so they're telling you how great soy milk is for you. Like, those used to be your only two options. And now, at least, you've got some psycho in a bunker who's like, both of them give you cancer. Like, I don't know.
Let me ask you a question. Have you heard of the choice paralysis? You read that book about how, with so many choices, we now get, it actually becomes a problem?
I haven't read the book, but
you know of this concept, right? To me, I wonder if there's a tipping point, and that we've gone past it to where having 90 voices means that it's so diluted that you have no real story, and that the story just gets so watered down and beaten down by argument that you, and then the other problem becomes, then you only find, at least with those of you who have those two, if you disagree, you have to engage your criticism to figure out why you disagree,
right?
And be engaged with it. I think the internet allows people to be spoon-fed.
See, well, here's where I'll disagree, is because I think if you have two choices at any given moment with anything, you say to yourself, I have to pick one, right? You're just like, okay, I either like this one or I dislike it, so I'll just go to the other. I think with 90 or 100 or whatever that is, I think that actually forces you to think more on the subject, because you're like, that sounds crazy. And then in a weird way, at least for me, I find myself shunning everything and then being like, what do I actually think about this?
Interesting.
You know, like, it's like going to the movies it's like going to the movies with one person or going with 10 people, right? Yeah. You go to the movies with one person, and it's there's always that thing when you go with someone, they immediately start talking about what they thought about it, you know, and you're just like, oh, shut the fuck, you know what I mean? Just shut up. But I feel like when you go with a group of people, usually because everyone's shouting their opinion at once, you kind of retreat into yourself and you're like, what did I actually think about that?
That's how I feel. I wonder if that's you.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. I don't think most people, I actually am kind of in the middle on this one, but I think I lean more toward Arjun, that the bad of the internet is outweighing the good. I don't think most people are like you. I don't think most people are like, yo, there's a lot of loud voices. What do I truly think? I think a lot of people are like, here's a lot of loud voices. What's the loudest one that I kind of agree with? Let's be just as loud as them.
I want to clarify my position on the internet, because I think that the internet has allowed for some remarkable things.
Right.
That people in, you know, rural communities have access to information that they wouldn't have had. That, here's a big thing for us when we're talking about cultural identity and like what we talk about. The fact that you can be in India and exposed to heavy metal, and then it triggers something in you that responds to, and then you start a community based on heavy metal and be exposed to things that, I think that the internet has allowed for an acceleration of gay rights.
We're all kind of in this together now. The world's not nearly as disconnected.
Right.
I think that's a remarkable thing. I do think that there are a lot of things that concern me about, and this is actually my thing about technology in general. I think technology is given far too much power, and therefore we give over to it so quickly that we lose parts of ourselves. And it happens so quickly, and the rate of technological improvement is so dramatic right now that, I mean, just for instance, I think about this, like in the 1800s, right? We have a society right now that is so uncomfortable sitting with self. Right. Like you put a kid who's 5 years old, or no, you should put a kid who's like 17 years old, put them in silence where they don't have stimulation for 5 minutes, they will probably lose their mind. 1800s, I think back and I was like, well, it was dark outside. You maybe had one candle. What else are you doing but like sitting in silence and like,
but see, that's where I think, for me, the argument gets shaky. Because I think that, again, with self-awareness and being a human being, we are always looking for entertainment in some sort. Like, it's like, you know, now you have the pictures of people, like, sure, on the train, like, looking at their phones. But if you make that, you turn the clock back 100 years, it's people reading newspapers. It's like, we're always looking for something to keep us going. And be it now our phones, instead of just like sitting there and, you know, full.
But you're talking about self-awareness, which I hear what you're saying.
Right.
But I think that the internet and the fact that there's so much stimulation around, you never have to rely on your own self. You never have to check in with like, where am I at right now? Because I can, if I'm not feeling, I just dive into like I have friends that deal with anxiety and their way of coping with anxiety is to dive into a distraction.
Right.
Which they're solving internal problems externally. That is a very big issue to me when I look around society at this moment.
But I weirdly feel like it's all part of our evolution as a people. I know it sounds probably nuts, but I think that technology, what we thought technology was going to be versus what it is now, I think we kind of have to give into the fact that we are much more symbiotic with it as opposed to rulers or
I think that it is a part of our devolution, de-evolution. Yeah. And okay. I think it will come to our demise.
I mean, probably, but I mean, that's...
robots are absolutely going to kill us.
Yeah. But that's everything. You know, like, we could say that about the Neanderthals and us, you know? Like, I feel like it's one of those things that...
So you're saying that there's almost like we should just accept that humanity is... And you're not saying it in this negative terms, but
I'm
like,
not saying
there is an endpoint to this species, and this is just kind of this is where we're at with it. That's actually really fascinating.
Yeah.
Almost like an accept, it's almost zen in a way.
Everyone creates their own
species.
Like Neanderthals didn't knowingly create humans that are going to...
Right, they didn't, but at the same time, like, technology is just something that sprung from us because we needed it.
We don't need it. That's do we need it?
But I mean,
that's
are
a fascinating
we,
question to
okay,
me.
So what we need: food, water, and shelter, right? Yeah. Those are the three needs.
Right.
That being said, again, going back to the point of being stimulated, we know too much about ourselves.
Actually interesting. Yo, so Yasser, half black, half Muslim. Two horrible things. No. But you were raised by your mom, who's black. You identify as black.
Right.
You're much more Western in thought than us, who are Eastern in thought. And us, the kind of meditation Zen thing is much more in us that, like, all you need is self. And, like, you're like, well, it's good that we have these things to dive into. We kind of think it's bad because it's like, this is time you should be using to, like, meditate or reach a higher state or whatever, I assume.
Yeah, I don't...
Well,
I'm saying that, but I think that if we look at what we grew, right, technology came from the need to be greater than we were. And I think that what I'm learning through meditation and what I'm seeing as a higher evolved state of being is recognizing that everything, it's already within us. We don't need anything to be better than we are because we are already perfect as we are. We are already enlightened, God, nirvana, whatever, in us as well. So technology to me is born out of this idea that if we get somewhere, we will be enough. It's this desire to be enough. And that can be powerful, right? Because it allows for creation.
Right.
But I think it's run unbalanced with that recognition of when do I need... So we're not being... So just we're just doing progress for and innovation for innovation's sake.
But see, I don't... Here's where, again, I think we take the turn. As someone who is religious, I pray and meditate and do all that stuff. I don't see technology as any different than the Renaissance. Like, I feel like we are just in a... We're in a different period, in a different... a different state of knowledge in which our creativity is externalized.
Can I say something about the Renaissance? The Renaissance was artists and scientists that were attempting to commune with higher things.
Right. And I personally
don't know
feel
that that's what's happening when Apple creates the new iPhone.
Right. But that this is runoff from, for the sake of argument, what we were trying to do in building Hubble and IBM creating, you know, computers for mathematics' sake. You know, these are all just these
I
are
see what
all
your point
just.
Is. I see what you're saying. That's interesting.
You know, different facets of the same thing. Now, I'm not saying I'm 100% not arguing that I think technology is 100% good. I don't think that at all. And you know, again, a lot of it is crazy. But the idea that, I mean, me and you met because of technology, you know, and I do think that, like, again, just I think there are some incredibly amazing things.
Yeah,
I think we're learning.
You
I think
also got a death threat because
that's true.
Of technology.
That's true, but like,
you know,
but
that way a death threat. Like, his company ain't that great.
Well, this goes back to
this company ain't that great. That
well, no, but I'm just saying that, like, that's I mean,
but
two
that's
people
picking,
that,
that's cherry picking, right? I mean, let's
but
go
cherry
back
picking
to,
would also would be the death threat thing. Yeah, I can I could walk outside tonight, and you know, it's New York City.
Listen, here's what I'll say to your point that it's the greatest invention of all time. There's some great creations out there. I don't know that there's one where the bad is this heavily weighted against the good. Like, fire
I don't know
is
that
the
I...
way we survive. It also burns down houses. That's a terrible thing. But the good way outweighed the bad. Super
I don't know how you're, but I got to be honest, I don't know how you're quantifying, because I wasn't going to argue that the bad outweighs the good with internet. I'm just saying that I don't think it's the greatest thing that's
but
ever
there's
been
a
invented.
Lot of,
I don't know what you're, I'm curious to think.
I'm not trying to quantify it specifically, but there's a lot of collateral, like, a lot of, for every friend that Yasser meets, you could say he's gotten one death threat. Or, like, you know what I mean? Think of the crazy shit that happens on the internet.
But, like, okay, with fire, right? So you take, you know, you get enough people to learn about it. Food, you know. I mean, again, that it's what created the human race. You right. could easily say it's what sprung, you know,
right.
Consciousness in a very weird way. With technology and with the internet and everything we have now, like, we're finally spreading knowledge in a way that is unparalleled. And I mean that in the sense, not just like news, but I mean like the idea that like we can create something that is open source and like you and me and someone in Nepal and someone in Thailand, you know what I mean?
I want to make a small distinction here between knowledge and information.
Okay.
I think that, yes, the internet allows for an immense spread of information, but knowledge is the ability to critically draw connections and use information. And I don't think the internet helps gain knowledge. That is, you know who does that? Teachers, classes,
but
teaching
you,
critical thinking.
But now you, let's say you're a teacher, you can film yourself and put it on YouTube. And now anyone can find
sure.
that. You
so
know what I mean?
Go
like
back
I watched
to,
an MIT
so now
video
we go back to
on
what okay. is necessary.
Right.
Right. What technology is necessary?
Well, but that. But you could say that with anything. You could say that with food. What?
Sure.
What food
I think that,
is necessary?
I think that that's
what,
a great thing.
I mean,
that, I
the idea, like, I just mean it in the sense that, like, and I 100% see your point. But if we're basing everything off of necessity, we should all live in shacks. We should all be wearing pelts as clothes. And we should all be eating grain. You know
no,
what I mean?
I'm saying,
like, I just
sure I hear, and I that's yeah. a strong counter argument. But I'm advocating for a balance right now. What I think
okay.
that we're out
but
of is
do you not
balanced.
Do you? Okay, but I personally, I think humans are, you know, clearly I think we're brilliant, and I think that we have enough self-realization with everything to let the pendulum swing the other way. I truly believe so. I'm not. Again, I do think we have a symbiotic relationship with technology right now, and I do think that it will swing the other way. I'm not saying
I've
that we go back to the dark.
I've been asking myself recently a lot if that's going to happen. When would it happen? That seems like a long way away if it happens.
Well, here's what concerns me about that, because I think I would agree with that, but I was, you know, a lot of environmental scientists and global activists were, we've talked a number of times about the concept of community,
right,
and how for community to exist, there has to be an us and therefore there has to be a them,
mm-hmm,
right? So if we're talking about building a global community, that's why alien movies are so popular.
Right, yeah.
Because that's the them,
right,
and then
exactly,
the world comes,
yeah,
together. So many, many scientists and climatologists believed that global warming was going to become that them. And what stopped that from being the case was money and capitalism. Because money and capitalism allowed for the powers that be to say, hey, this lobby, the oil, petroleum lobby, oil lobby is so strong that they're going to say, we're going to fight that this is an idea. Because if you believe that, you're going to move away from the thing that's made me millions and millions of dollars. And so I'm concerned that capitalism and our also desire and our power structure as it is will hinder the pendulum from having that organic swing that you are advocating for.
But we
or believe in.
Right.
That's my concern.
No,
I'm not.
And
I'm not.
No, no. And I get it.
Also,
what
it's addicting. It's like physically addicting. Phones and technology.
Oh, yeah.
It
100% is. And I find myself in that trap a lot. But just to go the opposite way for a second, I do think that with the internet and like right now it is unregulated. Thank God it's unregulated, you know?
Right.
And we are in a time that, again, like, half the things I know right now, I promise you, if the internet did not exist, I would not go out and search for these things. Weirdly,
information.
Now, and I know what you're saying, knowledge versus information. I personally have a thirst for knowledge, but again, like I worked at a used bookstore, right? And so someone would have to come into my field of vision and be like, hey, this is a cool thing. Like, so that's how I ended up reading like Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth. Otherwise, like, for the sake of argument, who knows if I ever would have made that connection to that book in my life. Now I'm saying, like, if you are on Twitter and like, I'm not a powerful dude, but like I have, you know, like 20 something thousand followers. If there's something that interests me that I'm like, hey, I'm going to retweet that. If one person like looks at that, like all of a sudden that,
sure,
you know.
And that's that's one of the beautiful things that we talk about technology and the internet is allowed for is global, a bigger community.
Right.
And then learning from each other within that community. But I think it has to be, and this is where I think that the internet, it needs to come with more teachers that are teaching us how to do it responsibly.
Okay, I'll 100% agree.
And
with
I think
that
the technology comes oftentimes without a guidebook.
Yeah,
and that makes me nervous.
Yeah,
because listen, we know this to be true. The people that invented the iPad never gave it to their children.
Right.
They knew, and these were the people that invented it. And I actually put the onus on corporations.
Yeah.
They should have advocated and let us people know, hey, we know that this is dangerous to give for your kids. This should be, and I do think that there are self-imposed regulations that must be placed on technology and anything, truthfully. Food companies need to do it. I think movies should be better about it. I think in general, like, if you're not going to give something to your children, how can you in good conscience allow it to be sold to other people's children? Like, that is crazy to me. And yet, I mean, how many times have I been around? And listen, I'm sure I'll do it when I'm a parent because sometimes I'll be just so damn tired. And I'm like, will you please shut up?
Right.
Here's an iPad. Watch TV so you can get out of my face for 30 minutes. But how often do we see that?
Yeah. I mean, all the time. And I have friends with kids now who 100% will just be like, oh yeah, I gave Johnny the iPad and, you know, he stopped crying or whatever. But I don't know. Again, I think just my original point just being that I think that now, not to be like sad and depressing and be like, that's the world we live in, but I do think it's the world we live in now. We moderately have to accept it. But we also, I think that, and going with what you're saying, in distributing not just information and distributing knowledge, you seem to be the kind of person that if you do have a kid and you say, hey, I'm going to give this, you just said you would give it to your kid, right? I don't think you would give it to your kid and be like, hey, just watch TV. I think you give it to your kid and you're like, if you're going to do something, you're going to watch this documentary or you're going to read
for
this
sure
book or you're going to. So That's what it comes down to.
But that's because I'm coming to my understanding of technology with the desire to balance it for not just, like, this isn't going to solve my problem.
Right, but you are of a generation. It's like the TV thing, right? And it's like the radio thing. When, you know, our parents or our parents' parents were first introduced to all this stuff, all they did was watch TV and all they did was microwave their food. Now, we know for a fact doing both of those things are pretty terrible for you. And I know more people now that don't use a microwave than do. And I'm saying that in us personally, of us being close to the same age, I'm assuming, you know, that we personally are the pendulum that swings the other way. So
The only dangerous thing about that is how reactionary that becomes.
Right.
Like, we have to wait. And honestly, and that's the byproduct of democracy, right? Democracy is very, in general, slow.
Yeah.
It's how it works. And that's the price you pay for having everyone have this a chance to say have a say in it, right? But if we're waiting for us, like, it's too late now.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think we're waiting.
Quick, the difference between your microwave analogy and TV analogy is the microwave isn't, first of all, physically addicting. Second of all, the TV thing, I was consumed with TV as a kid. Kids aren't now because they have the internet, but you're just consumed with a distraction from yourself, something to occupy your time and entertain you. Microwaves with food, that's just convenience. Convenience is great. We love convenience, but something that entertains us, that's like we crave
but
that we
need.
But
we've always been entertained, though. That's what I'm saying. We're just, if it's not but painting, it used to be if it's not constant. Books, if it, yeah, but that's, it also, it's all, but it's all access. If, for the sake of argument, if the printing press would have been invented 100 years before it was and books were free, everyone would always be reading books all the time.
But that's not technology. It is technology. I see what your point, but I think that we need to remember that books still force you to engage your mind.
Right, but you're doing
the television,
it, you're still...
But the television doesn't... The television allows me to shut off my brain and leave myself and go into that world. And I'm pointing at a computer monitor.
Right.
For the book, my imagination is triggered. I'm hearing the voices. I'm creating the pictures. Also, with that, people were still engaged. Like, we would then sit around the table. There were sitting rooms. Like, we know in like, based on architectural history, there was a room that was just a sitting room.
Right, absolutely.
That's where you would entertain people. People would be entertained within, like, physical contact with each other. And isolate, and it taps into this thing, and I'll never forget this. There's a gentleman who, I forget his name, and I apologize to you who aren't listening.
Arjun, you have forgotten me.
He was a reporter for the Rolling Stone, and he, like,
Peter
covered
Travers.
The Beatles, and he actually, like, he was the one that broke the idea that the Beatles stole some song from you know, a folk song or a black spiritual or something. And he came and he, like, ended up really covering the hippie counterculture movement in the 60s and all of that, Woodstock and all that. And then someone was asking him, he was part of a class that I was auditing, and he was asked by one of the students, how would you compare the green movement now with the counter, like the hippie movement then? And he said, I don't know how you compare the two because I don't understand a group of people that are attempting to care about the world when they only exist within the virtual world.
Right.
And it was his thing of saying, because, like, a lot of people compare those two in a very similar way.
Yeah,
and his point was just like, I don't get it. You guys are all, like, are you guys actually gardening? Like, are you guys actually in the world?
Right.
And I mean, look, I'm the last person to know what the fuck to do in a garden. I'm not saying that I'm going to be that guy that jumps out and goes to a commune. So I'm not trying to paint that picture, and I'm not trying to put myself as that person because I'm not. But I do think that we need more balance.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I here's the thing. I get your argument 100%. I think that either, number one, like I said, I think it's symbiotic, and I do think that we forcibly swing the pendulum the other way. I'm not saying that I think overnight, and I don't think that I'm not going to say it's everybody because I, you know, like, I'm from Marietta, Georgia, and like, I promise you, 99.9% of that city thinks the complete opposite of me, and all they want to do is sit online and stream episodes of Duck Dynasty or, you know, whatever's on MTV if they're a teenager. Like, the thirst for knowledge and all of that stuff, like, definitely is lost on a lot of people. But I think that, and in my great hope, I think that the internet sparks a thirst for knowledge in more people, hopefully, than it has been in human history collectively, because of the dissemination of information. I'm hoping, I guess that would be my thesis, is that I'm hoping the dissemination of information creates a thirst for knowledge in more people than it has, and that is what we get. And that's when we create a new renaissance or whatever right. that might be.
Well, with knowledge then comes power, right? And I think right. that's what you, and I think that, hey, look, man, I hope so too. And I think that that's a beautiful thing to do.
Should we've we talk been talking about boobs? Like, what is happening?
I mean, like,